You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is the second chapter of The Frost Fair Affair, a Regency magic comedy of manners with spies and sleigh rides. Don't forget to check out my Patreon for the special offer of an advance paperback of Tea and Sympathetic Magic closing this week. But for now, The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 2, Snow and the Secret Senate. The first proper snow of winter fell later that day. It dabbed and floated in gentle spirals through the grey streets of the Isle of Town, gathering weight and speed. Mnemosyne watched it from the window seat of the second library of Stormbolt, the ducal residence. This was her favourite of the libraries, the smallest and least showy of the three, and the one where she could most easily evade other people for hours at a time. She had adopted this particular library seat as a child, on the rare occasions when the various branches of the Seaborne family came together in town rather than one of the country estates. It was the furthest away from anything else in the house. Even the maids only dusted in here once a week, as Henry's great-grandmama Jupiter had once declared that too much cleanliness was bad for the longevity of paper. Neame suspected that, much like herself, Henry's great-grandmama Jupiter preferred books to people. She was still chewing over the information that Juno had revealed to her earlier that day, over tea and crumpets, in the arcade of ladylike dainties. A secret senate, otherwise known, according to Juno's sources, as the Great Discretion. While it was not an official governing body, the group was made up of the wives, mothers, and occasionally sisters and daughters of past and present members of the Court of Lords and the Parliament of Gentles, clearly a hub of great power and efficacy. By all accounts, it was the Great Discretion who quietly ensured that corsetry fell out of fashion and contraception amulets fell in, both stunning social changes that offered new freedoms to Neame's generation. This raised an important question. If there was indeed a secret senate of ladies, using their matrimonial and womanly wiles to enact vital change on behalf of women in society, then why on earth had they allowed the great injustice around portal travel to continue for so long? The door opened behind Neame, and she heard the sonorous voice of Bellings, the butler of Stormbolt. Cousin Henry was a wild, aimless puppy dog of a man, with no more sense than the gods gave a dormouse. And yet he had marvellous luck in hiring staff. Bellings was one of a team of excellent butlers who staffed the various ducal residences. He was so good at his job that Neame could not even resent the fact that he, more than anyone else in this household, always knew exactly where she was at any given time. "Mr. Charles Thornbury," Bellings now boomed into the library, before disappearing back behind the door in a haze of competence. "Personal spellcracker to His Grace the Duke of Storm." There he was, her Thornbury. Rather dishevelled, one of his coat sleeves looking quite askew. "No need to announce me," he called behind him with a weary impatience. "I live and work here, still." No response from the best butler this side of the river. Neame allowed a warm smile to cross her face. Possibly she did not even have a choice in the matter. "Hello there." Thornbury's own face warmed up rather quickly as he took her in. "Hello there." They gazed soppily at each other for a moment or two, which was just enough time for Nanny Savignon, Henry's old nurse, to slide into the library with a basket full of knitting and a cheeky twinkle. "Don't mind me, dears," she said sweetly, and settled into a corner of the room with her back turned to them. There was that butler competence again, supplying all the needs of the household before they even thought of them, including appropriately discreet chaperonage for a newly engaged couple living under the ducal roof. Neame usually hired her own chaperone, Mrs. Paula Days, a lady novelist of her acquaintance. But Mrs. Days disliked town as much as Neame did. Besides, the whole benefit of having married female friends of one's acquaintance was that one could mostly do away with the whole chaperone issue. Mostly. Darting a sheepish look in the direction of the nurse, Thornbury crossed the library and sat beside Neame on the window seat. He kissed her gently on the cheek, careful not to smack his lips too loudly. The old woman had ears like a bat and gossiped with everyone. Then took both her hands in his, which were not as cold as you might expect for a man just returned to the house. "You didn't walk home, then," Neame said archly. "Portal?" "Portal," he confirmed. "His Grace has had me popping in and out of drawing rooms all afternoon, delivering invitations for this soiree he's hosting for the Duchess next week." "That's not your usual line of work, is it?" Thornbury's tasks for the Duke were generally magical in nature, such as ensuring that Henry did not fall prey to any charms or hexes. This threat had lessened somewhat once Henry chose a wife. "Flying paper doves," Thornbury said with a wince. "My job was to ensure they got to their targets without falling into fireplaces or being shot down by the magical defences of each household." "Should have made paper pigeons instead," said Neame, who was a dab hand at invitational magic. "They fly faster and don't take any nonsense." "It is sweet, though," she added. "Henry wants to make a fuss of Juno's name day, since they didn't have an especially grand wedding." "Oh," said Thornbury, pretending to be serious, "is that your way of saying you want a full 7-night gala when your name day comes around?" Neame's eyes widened. "No, thank you. Books, chocolate, and solitude are my 3 favourite gifts." "I'll make sure to wrap you a bouquet of absent friends and relatives when the big day comes around." Neame liked this very much. The simple domesticity of a quiet conversation at the end of the day. If not for the presence of Nanny S. in the corner, it might be a preview of the life they were to have together, when matters were sorted out to a satisfactory conclusion. "You didn't get to work on your lecture at all, then?" "Not today. I'll have a stab at it later tonight. How was your morning? More scheming and cakes with the Duchess?" "Plotting, thank you," Neame said primly. "It sounds so much more official than scheming." Thornbury darted a quick glance at the nurse and then shifted closer. His bare hand brushed the back of Neame's wrist, making her shiver. "Plotting," he corrected himself gravely. "Any progress?" She gave him a stern look. "A little more now that I know there is such a thing as a secret senate." "I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about." "Don't pretend. If I did know, I shouldn't. Secret ladies' business. Nothing to do with me." "Juno thinks they'll be a big help to the campaign." "Really?" said Thornbury, with a slight frown. "You don't think so?"
"I didn't say that."
Neame raised both eyebrows. "But you don't think so?" "I think that the rich and powerful can't always be relied upon to do the logical thing in anyone's best interest," said Thornbury, looking more serious than ever. "If the great discretion are half as powerful and effective as rumour suggests, why would they let something like the portal restriction continue for so long? Don't take their support for granted. You'll have to win them over." This was exactly what Neame had been thinking, but it was so much more real and depressing coming from his mouth. He noticed, of course. The trouble with being courted by a spellcracker was that his job relied on him being highly observant. "Don't be discouraged," Thornbury said now, kissing her gently just above her eyebrow. "I have great faith in your abilities. Look what you achieved with a table of teacups last season. But don't rely solely on Juno's advice when it comes to the titled upper crust. She's barely been a duchess for 5 minutes. Is Lady Liesl in town? She might even have a membership to you know what. If not her, then her aunts and grandmother. She's supposed to be coming to town this winter, Neame said glumly. Last I heard, she'd only just set out by boat from the Isle of Sandwich, and that's at least a week's travel. If this cold snap settles, she might suffer further delays. Which was, of course, the point of her portal campaign. Why should ladies drudge their way through snow, sleet, swan-shaped boats and ill-smelling carriages when there was magic in the world? Thank you so much for listening to Sheep Might Fly. I can come back next week for another chapter of The Frost Fair Affair. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.